You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle. He's been here. These guys have not. David Goss, Bobby Warshaw, welcome back, fellas. You're a glow, as we've defined on this show. It's the Frisco glow that you have.
I'm tan.
I guess you are tan.
You guys, you look refreshed.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah.
You guys,
definitely from calling
by
a
Saturday,
bajillion youth games.
7 days, like 35 games. That'll refresh you.
So you just completely slept like through all of Sunday.
No, I had a Passover Seder. My family was nice enough to hold one in reserve for me.
Very nice.
Ooh. Yeah.
So in case you didn't know, these guys have been at GA Cup.
And bitter herbs.
that's the perfect way to get right back on your game. GA Cup coming up. We've also got Week 8 in all its glory in review, including John Molinaro on some drama between Toronto FC and Jozy Altidore, more particularly Bill Manning, the president of the club, and Jozy Altidore. But we're told everything is okay. Jozy has tweeted an apology, so we'll get to that with John here in just a bit and find out what happened. As I said, GA Cup, the Sounders, U17s, Champions Division triumph, history made.
Pumps me up.
Yeah. But don't tell NYCFC fans about how good Danny Leyva is, or you might just get like blown off Twitter for the next 5 days. Just
Happened?
That's a thing that happened.
Was this your James Sands thing?
Yeah, that was that.
If James Sands picked up more yellow cards and was a tougher tackling lad, maybe you'd put him in your...
Gotcha.
Wow.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. MLS announces that it's going to expand to 30 teams. So what does that mean for Sacramento and St. Louis and many other possible markets? Plus, training compensation and solidarity payments now will be accepted and enforced by Major League Soccer. They had not done that since 1996. The Board of Governors meeting in L.A. was, as Ben Bear might say, lit. A lot of news coming out of that one. We got a lot to cover. Let's just get at it right now. LAFC are atop my personal power rankings, and I would expect every other MLS power ranking that comes out over the next week.
Such disrespect to the Caps.
Gosh. 4-1. 4-1 against Seattle Sounders. This thing was billed as kind of the clash of the Titans, both in the Western Conference and Major League Soccer. It turned out just to be one Titan, though no Chad Marshall and also no Raul Ruiz Diaz. What LAFC are doing is pretty special right now. What Carlos Vela is doing, 10 goals, is pretty special right now. But Bob Bradley says, I don't think we're doing something that's so different and unique. I don't think we're the ones setting the standard. That would be wrong. Is he maybe wrong? Or is he right, Doyle?
He's Bob. If you tell him the sky is blue, he's going to tell you why you're wrong. It's just Bob. To say that they're not set it. This is such a backwards way. They're awesome. They played an awesome game. It was literally one of the best regular season performances I have ever seen in this league. Because Seattle, granted, they were missing two players. But Seattle
they also started the game man down. They played 10 on 11.
Yeah, it's a Roman
That's
Torres.
That's definitely a Roman Torres, right?
He was not great.
Yeah. Instead
he
of
could barely play
nobody,
in my
you
men's
just
league.
Two-footed right there.
That was not good defensive technique on that tag. Seattle won 20 of their last 25 regular season games. This is a really, really good team. This is a team that is on track for 65, 70 points, and LAFC ripped them apart. And you said, you know, Carlos Vela. Carlos Vela was the fifth best player on the field for LAFC. That central midfield, what Marc-Anthony Kay did on both sides of the ball, what Edward Atuesta did on both sides of the ball, this was as complete a performance as I've ever seen in the regular season. It was awesome.
It was beautiful. And Marc-Anthony Kay is one of the best stories. Goes to college in Canada, goes to USL, Louisville, does well there, gets the call up, and he was rolling for LA last year. And then he got hurt, and that kind of hurt their season. Now he's back. He looks like he belongs in and around the 18-yard box, on the ball, head up, making quick decisions and putting it on the money.
And they, when he was out last year, you know, you bring in Lee Wynn, and he's going to create for you, and he's going to play up the field. And we also talked about this at the end of last year, but Atuesta wasn't playing at the end of last year for whatever reason. he's now unleashed and they can play him as many minutes as they need him for this year. But that combination of those two and that, Atuesta can win the ball, can get the attack going, but Kay can find that killer passes and allow the players in front of him to move and open up those angles. And the first goal to Vela, the whole game is going to the left side of the field, and he cuts that ball back. And that's when you get Lee Wynn back in there, and he's the one, he's in front of Kay, moving defenders, pulling defensive midfielders out, and then Kay can find that killer pass with both feet because he's like a baller and has basically zero holes in his game, it looks like right now. That's going to make this team more dangerous than they were, I think, last year, which was the issue in the playoffs, partially. And the other thing is he helps defensively.
Yeah,
so it's not just a sieve defensively with a guy who can play on the ball. He helps Atuesta.
I love the movement and every single one of these goals. If you go back and look at him and you watch what Carlos Vela is doing or Diego Rossi or what Christian Ramirez is doing, it's all very intentional. It's all very fluid. They're moving the chess pieces around. They're opening up angles, and then they're hitting them. It really is that simple. These are, I don't want to say easy opportunities, but when it's Christian Ramirez, like, at a good angle, bearing down on your goalkeeper with absolutely no pressure, that's a good opportunity. Bobby, as a soccer nerd, what do you see from LAFC?
Well, I'm just going to go off what David said with Lee Wynn getting back in the lineup. Do we think Lee Wynn gets back in the lineup?
I had that flag in my head, too.
Well, and the main reason is that this team is good at a lot of things. The thing they are absolutely spectacular at is counter-pressing in the middle of the field.
Yep.
When they lose the ball, their ability to have three hyper-mobile guys go win it back and then hit you with the next wave, the next pass through, is unreal. And Latif Blessing is amazing at it.
Latif Blessing leads the league in tackles.
I believe it. Like, Lee Wynn, great passer, might improve their possession, but their it factor right now, the thing that they crushed DC with, the thing that they crushed Seattle with, was their ability to be impossible to play through the middle against. And I will say, Marc-Anthony Kay, this is maybe a little bit hyperbolic, but he might have had the best 25 minutes of passing through the lines you will ever see from a player. His ability to get the ball off the defenders and break lines to Latif Blessing and Carlos Vela was unreal.
I love Bob Bradley's comments after this because, to me, reading somewhere, but you know, the tea leaves and wherever else, he's just trying to keep him motivated. Well, been rolling people. He's like, it's not that good. Marc-Anthony Kay, you were actually kind of sloppy passing-wise. Like, you know, standard is higher. The standard is higher. Be Messi. Be Xavi. Be Iniesta. Don't be satisfied. That's what I read.
1,000% what he was doing with that post-game press conference. But also, a little bit of a difference between what the question was and the way Bob took it. The question was in the short term. Right? Are you setting the level in the short term? What Bob was thinking isn't a long term, because what they're doing isn't revolutionary. There's nothing about the way they're playing that is innovative or unique. They are basically doing exactly what Toronto FC did 2 years ago with the position of their players, with the possession style, and just executing it at this point, maybe even a little bit better, and they counter press better. But there's nothing unique that they are doing that other teams would steal. They're just doing it really well. And I was going to say, it was funny from our side, the reporter was just looking for a quote. Right, and Bob was just like refusing. Right, the reporter wasn't asking an intense soccer question. He had a deadline, and Bob just didn't help him out with the deadline, is the way I interpreted it.
Yeah, like 22 points for LAFC at the top of the table.
You got to be smarter, football people here.
At where? At this table? LAFC.
I think Bob would agree
points.
With that. Yes,
he might. He might. LA Galaxy right behind him on 18, and then Sounders at 16. The top of the West is stacked. The East is 14 points down. We'll talk about that in just a second because it's an absolute crapshoot. We had some themes here this week. First wins, Portland in Columbus. They were calling it the Caleb Porter revenge game. Well, he did not get said revenge. Giovanni Savarese got his first win of the season. The Timbers got their first win where they won MLS Cup. Vancouver, first win. That was back on Wednesday. It was also the first loss for LAFC. But NYCFC, first win.
I want to talk real quick about Vancouver.
Can't let you jump in right now.
Okay, keep going.
I'll let you have Vancouver later.
Okay.
Because we're talking Domi Tarrant He's admitting he's under pressure.
Okay.
On the radio show before the game against DC United, which, by the way, they won 2-0, missed a PK as well, Domi said, quote, right now I am in trouble as a head coach. I know and I have to accept that. The man says it, so we got to take him at his word. Then they went out and got the first win of the season. It was a big win. DC are atop the Eastern Conference. DC is a team that a lot of people said, including ourselves, are in that top echelon. You go back and look at their wins, maybe not. Maybe not, but this was a much-needed, have-to-have-it win for NYCFC before this thing kind of kept spiraling off the rails, Doyle.
It was good. It was good. They played really well. I thought they played well in the second half against Minnesota United last week. Though the thing with NYCFC is that second half, they were in a 4-2-3-1. This whole game, they were in 5-4-1, 5-3-2 type of thing. It's always changing. so you never know if it's repeatable. But they did a really nice job in central midfield of just gumming everything up for DC. They couldn't get Lucho Acosta on the ball in the spots where he wanted to be. Playing with five at the back meant the extra center back was there, and both Collins and Chanot did a nice job of stepping off the line into the midfield to add extra numbers when they needed to. And then DC United was never able to get around the flanks and tear it apart. And when you do that and then allow in the other direction the sort of quick end-to-end breakouts that the new guy, Hebert, allowed for, like, he created that with his movement for NYCFC. So it was a really good game plan from Domi Torrent. I didn't think Ben Olsen made any adjustments when he obviously should have. And full credit to this team. The Pigeons deserve their win.
Should he not be under pressure now?
No, he should absolutely be. He should absolutely.
But also, there's no danger in him saying that because it's a reality.
Yeah.
Like, what's he going to do? Deny it? He hasn't won. They were poor last year to close the season. They were poor in the playoffs, and they hadn't won a game yet this year. Like, him showing he doesn't have a sense of reality isn't a positive for him. And if he loses the first 14 games of the season and gets let go, whether he admits it or not, that's going to happen, right? So he had nothing to lose by saying that. And I don't know if he was trying to inspire the players behind him or put a us-against-the-world mentality in the club and say, look, everyone's coming for us, all that stuff. Maybe. But otherwise, it's just being honest, which I don't think he really has any danger of it hurting him.
We'll see if he sticks with this formation. Bobby, I'm going to give you a choice. Mm-hmm. You've got DC United mm-hmm. and why maybe they aren't as good as we made them out to be. Mm-hmm. Or you can jump back to your Vancouver point. By the way, Vancouver won midweek 1-0. They lost on the weekend 1-0 in Orlando. Nani scored a goal, a.k.a. it got hit off his leg, and he celebrated it like as a World Cup winner.
Well, I want to talk about Vancouver because it's in reference to LAFC.
Do it.
Because there's got to be a question of how do you beat LAFC right now? And Vancouver did the template. And yes, LAFC was missing players. Absolutely. And that mattered. But where LAFC kill you is by passing between your lines. Mark Anthony Kay, Edward Atuesta getting on the half turn, finding Vela in between, finding Blessing. Even in the final third, Vela gets it. And where does Diego Rossi run every single time? In between your outside back and your center back. So what did Vancouver do? They play extremely tight horizontally. And they were great. But the reason I want to talk about it, Andrew, is not just for Vancouver's win, but every single team that plays LAFC now, you have to take that template. You cannot play straight up. You cannot play a generic way against this team. You have to tighten your lines. You have to force them to go wide, and then you deal with it.
Is there any part of that? Because I hear what you're saying, and I think, you know, theoretically I agree, but that game, Peter Lee Vassell is like on the penalty spot, looking at a shot three different times. Carlos Vela has another opportunity to score. So even if that is the plan, are you still opening yourself up to getting run off the field? Because well, I think they really should have won good. That game at least 2-1. Sure.
But if you have a good game plan against a great team, they're going to get looks. It's just what gives you the better opportunity mm-hmm. to win the game. Right? That's always going to be the conversation. A great soccer team should create opportunities even if you play them well. You're never going to shut them down. And Carlos Vela is the type of player who should create chances even when you've got five guys around him. He will every once in a while.
I think the bigger long-term question for the Caps is can they get results any other way rather than like whether they're playing LAFC or Orlando City, it seems like their best path is to just pack it in.
And this is always what Mark Dos Santos does. Talking to players that have played for the former teams, they actually admit the first 10 games for him suck. They are not fun. They are not fun for training. They are not fun in games. All you do is sit deep. All you do is work on your shape. And then once you get that down, then you start to add other parts. So I think if you're a Caps fan, this was always going to be the way it was set up. It sucks to lose, but it feels to me like this is the exact same way Mark Dos Santos has done it everywhere else, and it's worked everywhere else. It's harder now, yeah. But...
it's been methodical so far. They could have got that 0-0 against Orlando, that would have been actually a very good result.
You thought you were going to come in hot here. LAFC, one of the best teams in MLS history. What's wrong with DC United? Let's have fun. And Bobby brought you into Vancouver sits in a low block.
Sorry,
but this I know, is but what I actually enjoyed that. Fast. I missed that. It's been a week since I've had that sort of like back and forth between Doyle and Bobby.
I tried to help Bobby out there. I was like, all right, let's make this Vancouver point relevant.
Hey, what if I go to Thierry Henry? How many groans will we have here? Because
shouldn't we just go to Denny Hamlin?
It just doesn't stop now. Taylor Twellman said on the ESPN broadcast that there's more smoke than there is fire, but there is smoke. ESPN Deportes was reporting that it is happening, and then Sky Sports said it is happening as well. Same guy who reported it before, who barely ever tweets, but now has this information. yeah, but then Dennis Hamlin hit the inboxes. And he said, quote, recent reports of Thierry Henry joining the New York Red Bulls are false. Well, that still doesn't erase the truth of the situation right now for Chris Armas, which is that it's not very good because they lost in New England 1-0. You look at the standings, Atlanta United are at the bottom in the Eastern Conference, tied on points, but with another game played are the Red Bulls. So points per game, they are the basement right now. That's not good.
No, it's not good. I've made it clear on this show and elsewhere, I don't agree with what Chris Armas has done with this team. I think there should be some pressure. I also think that it is crazy to consider him to be a coach in the hot seat. Given what he did in the second half of last season, they actually had a higher points per game under Chris Armas last year than they did under Jesse Marsh. The coach deserves some rope here. So I think the rumors about Henry joining the Red Bulls and it's a replacement for Chris Armas, it's dumb and it's disrespectful, and I hope it doesn't happen. I do want to see Thierry Henry in the league, by the way, but I don't, like, right
do
now.
You actually?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why?
I love Thierry Henry.
I'm saying you want to see Nani in the league, dude.
Yeah, I mean.
Wait, what? What was that? I don't think Henry and Nani are on the same level.
But the Red Bulls were terrible this weekend. They were terrible this weekend. All this stuff that people said about Atlanta being slow and uncoordinated in attack and just not having any ideas, that applies to the Red Bulls as well. The difference is Atlanta have the talent to brute force some results. And we saw it last week in New England. Like, you throw out two $15 million attacking midfielders and the, you know, best goal scorer in league history who's in his prime, and you have essentially a fourth DP in Villalba, and you have Nagby, and you know, on down the list, on talent, you're just going to win some games. The Red Bulls don't have that kind of talent advantage. Their margins are much finer, and it's showing. And the margin in this one was, you know, Robles making an uncharacteristic error, and you know, the guys up front not really creating the type of chances they need to, and that's how you lose 1-0 and find yourself at the bottom of the standings in points per game through a month and a half of the season.
You got to wonder, for Chris Armas, we've talked about it a lot, but he's trying to find another way to win games for this team, potentially in the playoffs, but it reaches a point where you're so far behind, you got to go back to what works. So now the conversation
See,
for
I
that
feel
team-
like they've tried to. They've tried to press the last couple of weeks. It's the players don't look as bought in as they were. They're just not. It's easier to play against the Red Bulls, and when it's 5% easier to play through you, you're like 25% more likely to give up those, because it's like the press is such a high variance thing. Like, if it's not working, you're in trouble. And right now they're in trouble. And I think the other thing, and I know I'm going on a rant here, this is like a filibuster, the Red Bulls, like, their identity was, from the coach and from the sporting director, was ruthlessness. Dax McCarty was one day too old, and they got rid of him. And Sasha Kljestan was one day too old, and they got rid of him. And they changed out guys, and anybody who had bad body language was not going to play. If you look at this team under Chris Armas, there are a lot of guys who have bad body language, and there are a couple guys who are maybe a little bit too old, and I don't understand why Chris Armas was brave enough against Sporting Kansas City to sub Bradley Wright Phillips, who has one goal in 16 games. He subbed him off in that game against New England in a bigger game because it's an Eastern Conference game. They needed that goal. He didn't bring Brian White on. Chris Armas has got to be braver.
Bobby, we've had a lot of discussions on this show about the tactics as it relates to the Red Bulls. I do want to get your thoughts on this one.
I've shared my thoughts before on the fact that I'm okay with every adjustment Chris Armas has made. You know, I think if we were the coach, I think you have to realistically look at the choices he had, and any of us might have done the same in their attempt to do better in the playoffs and win MLS Cup. At the same time, you have to acknowledge it hasn't worked. And at this point, as David put it, they're scrambling. I also want to add in to what Matt said about just the individuals on the team. It's also a really weird phase with where they're at with a lot of the individuals. Maybe their two best players, the two center backs, got huge pay raises, right? How does that affect an individual? Michael Murillo clearly wants out. Bradley Wright Phillips, a little bit older. Kaku wants out. So there's just five or six guys, too, besides the fact that you're right. The things that Chris Armas have done even though I think they were the right decision, have not worked. But you also have to look at the individuals and what's going on in their lives and their careers.
No Kamar Lawrence.
And so it's also
they also lost Tyler Adams.
So are we right. saying, and, are we so saying this a, is a tougher management time for Chris Armas than it had been for Jesse Marsh, at least after the system was established and the culture was built?
I think so, but in part of it was it felt like Jesse Marsh always got ahead of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is why he's going to be managing a Champions League team next year. Mm-hmm. He always made the move before the move demanded to be made. And Chris Armas and Denny Hamlett are now in a situation where they have to make reactive moves. Mm-hmm. They have to patch the boat because it's sinking a little bit.
Yep. Bottom of the East right now. The Eastern Conference is wild, by the way. Atlanta United are in the bottom based on some of the tiebreakers right now, which are not points per game, but that'll even out over the course of the season. They lost 2-1 to FC Dallas at home. Frank DeBoer said they'd win 28 out of 30 games like that. Well, they got one of the two, apparently. Apparently. Doyle's not buying it.
No, I'm not. His point was we created so many great chances. Well, you created great chances over the last 15 minutes of the game when you were already down 1-0, 2-0. And that's not from your structure. That's not from any tactical adjustment. That's from, oh my God, we're losing at home again, and 50,000 fans are booing us. Let's throw the kitchen sink out there. And that's not sustainable. That's not a plan that you could, like, okay, once we go down 2-0, we're going to push numbers forward. Then we're going to get results. That's basically what Dome Toronto did down this.
James O'Connor might agree.
Oh, fair.
At home.
But like Minnesota that's basically what Dome did down the stretch for NYCFC last year. So he could point, like, they won the expected goals battle. Jesse Gonzalez had a fantastic final half hour. You're playing from behind, from within 6 minutes, because your team doesn't know how it's supposed to press.
Also, at home, and your team's total value is, like, how many times out of FC Dallas? Like, that's where I think the pressure comes from is, you know, in this league, we've talked about parity a lot, but, like, there are expectations for Atlanta because of the amount of money they spent, because of the success before. So it doesn't matter if you think you would have won this 20 out of 30 times. Like, teams that spend the amount of money that you do, that have the expectations and ambition that you do, they just win it.
Yeah,
you know, they just win it. Like, and that's what's expected from a manager at this level in a club like this, is to not talk about how you would have won games. In my opinion, it's just to win them, right?
Yeah,
like,
but
that's the job description.
But that also comes down to, once again, with him, the messaging. He doesn't seem to understand how to communicate with the fan base in these moments, because it's the same one with the spoiled comment of, like, he's just being super blunt. I mean, we've watched how many soccer games where Mr. 53-47 over here, 9 out of 10 times that team would win. A coach thinks that, but you don't come out and just say that the first thing off the bat. Is like, we're awesome. We haven't won a game yet, but or we've won one game, but we're awesome. You don't do that, but clearly Frank DeBoer has a different take on it.
All right, so put our money where our mouths are. You think he's wrong, okay? Where are Atlanta? Do they end up finishing in the top three of the East? Right now, you have to put your money on the line. Do you think that they're trending upward and you would pick them top three in the East?
Beautiful transition, because we wanted to talk about how crazy the East is, and this plays right into that. I mean, talent-wise, they should be, yeah? I think that's an easy agreement there, that they should be.
So Weeby's filibustering.
No, I don't think so. I don't think top three in the East.
I still absolutely think they're a playoff team.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But that's what I thought about Toronto FC 12 months ago.
But my money, I don't have like an endless supply here. Give us like the real quick taste, Bobby, because you were going through FC Dallas's tactics, and my impression was that they got their lead in the sixth. Shout out to Jesus Ferreira, third goal of the season, 18-year-old, let's go. And then they said, you know what, we don't need possession in this game. We really don't. Like, Atlanta figured out
28% possession.
I just think this team consistently looks better. It's a fun storyline. It is more entertaining for us to sit up here and talk about the team that spends the most money losing, and it is easy to get carried away with the fact that they aren't winning. But I still think that they look better than the results are suggesting. And the way Frank DeBoer wants to play will always take time. So, yeah, if you would have had me put my money on the line, I would still say this team finishes top three of the East. It wouldn't be a lot of money, but it feels like we're getting a little bit carried away with the results because it makes for a more entertaining storyline.
Okay, that's fine. Who's the top team in the East? I mean, don't everybody speak at once here, because who is it?
Toronto or DC at the moment.
Okay, you don't want to put Philly in there at all. No,
no, not yet. You still have to have the concern about Philadelphia that we had last year. A very good team who is very good against other good teams. But do you really, again, would you really put your job or your money on the line for them against Toronto or DC in the playoffs?
They don't have the Pozuelo. They don't have the Rooney. Marco Fabian was supposed to be that. And to be fair, he's been pretty productive when he's been healthy. But shocker.
Or not suspended.
Marco Fabian hasn't been healthy. The fact is, though, Philadelphia are getting results, mm-hmm. even when they have a ton of injuries.
Four wins in five here.
Even when they're missing Austin Trusty, who's been their rock at the back.
Sergio Santos was out.
Sergio Santos
Mark
has been
McKenzie
out most
had
of
like
appendicitis.
Yeah, appendicitis sort of like day of the game. It's a good result
for
Jim Curt.
Montreal always kill Philadelphia in Philadelphia. Granted, Montreal without Ignacio.
So it's not Philly. You're filibustering me now because I asked for who is the best team in the East.
Go ahead, Bob.
I was just going to say, I'll throw out a name. The Chicago Fire are one of the three best teams at playing soccer in the East. I have no problem.
I'm interested
when
in
you
that
watch
qualifier.
Them. When you watch them, yeah,
let
for
really
sure.
This is what it's like.
Hold on. Let me really say this right after the Rapids, who like
at this moment, and I think Atlanta United finishes top three of the East probably still, but at this moment, in terms of their ability to play soccer, their ability to break teams down, to create chances, not to mention the entertainment value, the Chicago Fire are in that top three. Maybe four if we put Union there, because I always like watching the Union. But they're in the top 3 to 4 of teams that you don't want to play right now.
This says it all. Nobody can come up with a name in the Eastern Conference.
No, it's Toronto.
Yeah, if Josie's healthy, it's Toronto.
If Josie's healthy and they have that allocation spot for it, whether it's Omar or Tim Ream. Right, they're going to get a proven MLS center back, I think, and then they still have enough money to go out and get a winger as well. It's going to be Toronto.
Okay, I'm okay with that. That's actually who I would go with as well. But that back line scares me a little bit.
Yeah, right now it's not good.
No. All right, let's talk to John Molinaro about this. It's a 4-3 win at BMO Field for Toronto FC. Jordan Hamilton with two late goals to get the win here, but it was a little bit of drama that got the tongues flapping. John, how's it going?
Good, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm following everything happening in Toronto with great interest, and it comes out on social media. Josie's unhappy about a trainer. The trainer's back. Now Bill Manning's talking about it. Instead of us summing it up, how about you do that? What happened?
Yeah, so this is a bit of an interesting tale. So after Friday's game, Josie was subbed out in the 82nd minute with some hamstring tightness. After the game, we go down to the locker room to talk to the players as usual. Josie sort of goes on this rant, completely unprovoked, saying how, you know, he's upset and he takes shots at Bill Manning, saying that Giuseppe Giulli, who is an Italian trainer who basically came to the team when Sebastian Giovinco came, and he's kind of worked on the designated player since then, basically accusing TFC president Bill Manning of letting his ego get in the way because when they sold Giovinco, they wouldn't let Giulli come back and work with the team. And this is someone who Altidore said he's worked with closely over the last 3 years. So he was obviously upset about that. And he, as I said, he had some very pointed comments for Bill Manning. He really didn't hold back in laying into him. So that sort of brewed over the weekend. And then this morning, the two sat down for a private meeting, had a chat and worked it out. And then we just hopped off a conference call with Manning with reporters a little while ago. And Manning said it was a big misunderstanding, basically explaining that the team was working behind the scenes with Giulli to renegotiate the deal because Giulli only really worked with the designated players, and Manning wanted to sort of expand his role to make him available to any member of the team. The problem was he didn't sort of communicate that. Like he had been working with Giulli behind the scenes on a deal, but Giulli wanted to keep those contracts sort of talks private. And Altidore obviously didn't know that. So Manning said he was basically just speaking out of turn. And that, you know, he didn't know what was going on, and that when he explained it this morning, all is well, and they hugged it out, and, you know, and that's where we are.
So all's well that ends well. There's no lingering issues. There's nothing else that we should read into here. This isn't, like, the symptom of a larger problem. It's just this one instance and a miscommunication.
I think so. I mean, I'm naturally cynical. I mean, believe me, I just tend to sort of lean that way. But I think, you know, knowing Josie the way I do, you know, from covering him for all these years, you could tell he was clearly frustrated on Friday. And I think that's where that rant, that's where he was, it kind of came out of that. He was a little bit uncertain about his status and how seriously the injury was, and which Manning confirmed today that he had an MRI and he's expected to be out for 2 to 3 weeks. So I think he was, you know, clearly frustrated. He was speaking out of turn. He didn't have all the effect, all the facts. You know, you could tell he was very emotional. So yeah, I mean, I don't think there's much more to it than that. I think Altidore, you know, during my time covering him, has been a pretty stand-up guy. He kind of wears his heart on his sleeve a little bit. So I'm not reading too much into this. That said, I mean, it wasn't the best look for the club. I mean, to have Altidore kind of come out and basically saying, you know, Manning is letting his ego get in the way of not letting Julie work with him. I think it sort of portrayed Manning in not the best light. And, you know, Manning kind of made light of it today, saying, you know, it was kind of like when you take your kid to the supermarket and he throws a tantrum in the middle of the aisle. But I have to think that, you know, he was probably pretty upset about it.
Wait, John, did he actually use those words?
He did, yeah. He said, you know, for fathers out there, you can appreciate it. It's like when you're with your kid in the supermarket and, you know, he throws a bit of a temper tantrum, or you're in the park, or you're in a public place.
That's incredible. This isn't over a candy bar. This is over the, like, hamstring of your million-dollar...
Yes.
Who's out...
No, hey, you know, and again, sort of Manning just said, you know, that this was something that, you know, he was working on. And, you know, I think he has to take some sort of responsibility here, too, because, you know, had he sort of mentioned this to Josie or to the team that they were sort of working on this, then this whole deal could have been, you know, avoided, this whole embarrassment. But as it stands, you know, Josie didn't know. He goes on this rant on Friday. And again, completely unsolicited. I mean, we were standing in the scrum, you know, around him, and it was jaw-dropping stuff. We couldn't believe the way he was just kind of going after, you know, Manning and the club on this. But, you know, again, I think it could have been all avoided had the communication between the two parties just been a little bit more forthright and clear.
We know that Josie's going to be with TFC for the long term, signed his contract. Michael Bradley in his last year. John, do you hear anything about these two sides negotiating? What do you think happens with Michael Bradley?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, I've heard kind of rumblings that there's been sort of talks and communication, but nothing sort of, you know, concrete. I suspect Michael is going to stay. You know, I think he's generally embraced the city of Toronto since coming here, not just the team, but the entire city. And I think the city has embraced him in a lot of ways. I think that the key here is, you know, the terms. I mean, Michael's going to turn 32 in June, July, I think. You know, Josie Altidore had to take a pay cut. They wanted Giovinco to take a pay cut. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, and I think Bradley will have to take sort of a pay cut if he wants to stay in Toronto. So it'll be interesting to see how he interprets that. And, you know, term of the deal, too, he might want something long-term. He might see this as his last major deal, while TFC might not want to lock up a midfielder, one who has proven to be incredibly durable for them and played a lot of minutes. But still, he is turning 32, and you have to wonder how committed TFC are going to be to giving him, you know, a long-term contract. But I think in the end, things will work out. I think both parties are really committed to having Michael stay here. The fact that it hasn't been worked out yet, I find that worrisome, because I think, you know, a lot of the times they'll re-sign guys, you know, midway through the season, like they did with, you know, Jonathan Osorio or past players. It's not necessarily a bad sign that he hasn't been locked up thus far. But I suspect that Michael Bradley will be with Toronto beyond, you know, the 2019 MLS season.
Open question as to what they'll do with this TAM spot they keep talking about. Ollie Curtis keeps referencing it with conversations with us and others in Toronto. They still held on to that number one spot in allocation. Real quick before you get you out of here, John, is there any chance they get that done before this window closes in May?
Well, time's ticking. You know, I have real doubts because, you know, Manning and Ollie Curtis have gone on scouting trips, whether it's to, you know, South America, or Manning just got back from Italy. You know, from what I'm hearing, there's nothing sort of imminent on the radar for them. It doesn't sound like this could get done. Now, that could change. I mean, you know how things are in this business. Things change rapidly within the blink of an eye. But, you know, as of right now, I find it hard to believe that they're going to get anything done before the primary window closes in May.
All right. Follow John Molinaro's coverage of Toronto FC and Canadian soccer at Sportsnet. He's the chief soccer reporter there. John, thanks so much for updating us, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Well, seems like everything's A-OK in Toronto right now. Jozy Altidore took to Twitter this morning about 35 minutes ago, about 1:30 p.m. Eastern, and said he wants to offer an apology to Bill Manning and Toronto FC for his comments following the match. Emotions got the best of me when speaking to the media after our wild comeback. Bill and I connected this morning, and I can confidently say that we are on the same page. So, that sounds good. 2 to 3 weeks out. Doesn't sound great. Hopefully it's not more. I think as we both agreed last night, Doyle, whatever you got to do to get this man healthy for the Gold Cup is what you do. What is the trainer?
Well, that's not what matters for them.
Well, true, but okay. For everybody that for has us, like, for us. National team interests. Yeah. What's he? He's a phenomenologist?
Phenomenologist, yeah.
Phenomena. Bum, bum, da, da, da.
No, no, I mean, that's phenomena.
Yeah, but I just...
You did it.
Yeah, that was, I guess, my dad joke for the show. I think quota is met there. Let's talk Galaxy. Dave, you had a question for all of us that I'll reverse on you. Are you sold on the Galaxy right now? They just beat the Dynamo.
I have to answer 2-1? The question that I asked.
I just wanted to see how you would answer.
No, I'm not sold on the Galaxy. I 100% think they're better than they were last year. I like the moves, as we've said, in midfield, those three that can all kind of play a similar role. And Giancarlo Gonzalez is just an upgrade as a personnel. They gave Araujo his debut, which I like the idea of.
Really good.
Yeah, at right back, which we've been saying for a while, if you're playing poor veterans, why not just play poor young kids if you don't think they're good enough?
And which he's not poor. That's the other thing.
Right, for sure.
Definitely not poor. So.
So, yes, I think they're better than they were last year. Do I think that there's still massive holes in this team? Yes, and Bobby's about to jump on me, but do I still think there's question marks about Zlatan carrying a team? Yes. So I'm not sold on the LA Galaxy. Doyle over here can't believe me. I'm not sold on the LA Galaxy, and that's why I asked Doyle.
They've given up 7 goals in 7 games. That was the biggest thing from last year. They gave up 68 goals last season, something like that, 65, which is terrible. So they've clearly improved the defense, and they've managed to do that even while playing through some injuries, even while trying to figure out who goes where. Jonas Dos Santos has quietly been excellent, and the guys in front of him, Leggett and Corona, have been very good as well. So they're solid in what's really a back 7. The attack is a problem, because all they do is cross the ball. But what's good is that they're aware of it. And I'm going to read you a Jonas Dos Santos quote after the game this weekend, which was a 2-1 win over a very good Houston Dynamo team. "I think you've seen our team thus far. I think you've seen our team thus far. It's not easy to win 6 of 7 games. I think the team is very compacted. We just need a little bit of patience. We need to have more ball possession and run less. Or more like know how and when to make runs, and not just run without necessity. I think the team is great defensively, and offensively, we just need to fix some minor details. It has cost us some effort to get into the first 10 minutes of the second half of games, and in the end, they score on us and they make us suffer. Little by little, we will fix those details." And that's what I'm saying. The Galaxy are a better team than they were a month and a half ago. They're a much better team than last year. And if you're taking over a team that was bad defensively...
But how does the attack change?
I mean, they need to cross the ball less. By getting wingers who can actually cut inside, right, and have that dual playmaker...
Does that happen when Roman Alessandrini comes back?
Roman Alessandrini hasn't looked the part for over a year now.
Okay.
He had bits. He had bits early in this year when you're like, oh, yeah, he might be back.
Yeah.
The team definitely looks better. Just a quick data point to point out, right? This Galaxy team's been great, but we have 5 of 7 at home, right?
Fair.
The 1 away game at Vancouver. So that's, you know, it is what it is. And at Dallas,
other teams in LA have found it difficult.
For sure.
To...
For sure. And who have they
lost,
beaten, right?
They lost at Dallas without Zlatan.
Okay. They've beaten... Maybe they're 2 big wins, Minnesota, Philly, and Houston. Those are the 3 hardest teams they've played. Not to say they aren't good teams, but they're not.
They're not LAFC or Seattle.
Correct. So just pointing that out, I'm not saying the Galaxy aren't good, and I agree with you. They have definitely gotten better. I was really worried, even 3 weeks ago, even though Zlatan was scoring, even though they were winning, it did not look like a great team to me. they're definitely better, but we have to put out those two data points. 5-7 at home and really yet to play what is probably a top team.
At Minnesota is the next game for this squad on Wednesday. That one promises to be
18 goals.
Yeah. That's going to be entertaining. Zlatan's going to take that over. He is going to own Minnesota, I feel like. Let's talk San Jose.
If he plays on short rest. I guess not short because they played Friday.
Yeah, I think he's fine.
That's fair.
I think he's fine. That's going to be a must-watch on Wednesday night for you. San Jose, 2-3. Mateus Almeida hugging his assistant coaches like he loves him some goals and success. They are celebrating like it really, really matters, which it does because they were pretty bad to start the season. They absolutely shellacked Kansas City. Danny Huson, 2 goals over the top in the first 12 minutes, and then it all goes downhill for Kansas City. Matt Beisler gets hurt. They're switching PK takers. Florian Youngworth gives up 2 of those, and it doesn't even matter. Shea Salinas is, like, spinning in right footers into the top corner. He's trying to find Chris Wondolowski late on. That was tough to watch. There were some chances there for Chris. Thought he might get his goal. Hey, are they back? Are they back, Bobby? Are they figuring out the man system? What's going on?
Well, a quick note on the game, which was interesting. Ilya Sanchez was getting man-marked, so what did he do? And we talk about this often. He basically went and stood on the left side of the field. He tried to drag away, I think it was Jackson Yule, but the problem was nobody from SKC came. Busio and Gutierrez didn't take that spot to get the ball off the defenders, and SKC just looked like the mess. On the flip side, Danny Huson is in this rare form of a center striker right now, and it caught SKC totally off guard. Usually center strikers, your center midfielder has the ball. What do they do in 2019? They check. Maybe somebody else runs behind. Danny Huson wasn't having any of it. He caught SKC thinking that he was going to check and ran straight behind. So those are my 2 details I wanted to point on in that game. Larger picture, San Jose starting to figure it out. I was always fairly confident that they would. Like, there's always going to be growing pains. Are they all the way?
They're not all the way. But they, Mateus Almeida has made some good adjustments. First is the personnel. Having Huston back, having, you know, putting Jackson Yule in there has made a difference. I told y'all he could play. Having Jackson Yule in there has made a difference.
I was waiting for it.
And having Florian Youngworth, even though it is the most bizarre thing. The man gave up 2 penalties and was still a net positive.
Fantastic.
For his team.
You know what? He just reads it so well, right? Because that's where their open man is. That's essentially where the free safety, so to speak, is. Yep. And he reads that position, even though when he does kind of get near the ball, it's not always gorgeous defensively, but he reads the spot so well. And his passing has been excellent. Yeah. Isn't it? San Jose stretches the field more than anyone else. You watch, and they're like all 20 yards apart, and you're thinking to yourself, how is this going to work? But Youngworth, Cummings, Godoy have this irrational confidence in their passing ability, none of which are above average passers, and yet they're all so comfortable being isolated and finding the pass forward.
And it makes sense because there's like, they're not, Godoy and Yule aren't going anywhere, right? And that's the other like adjustment is that those two guys, they sit at the center circle. Mm-hmm. And once you cross the center circle, okay, they man mark you. But like anything on the other side, on the attacking side of the center circle, that's pretty much lava. They're not gonna cross that. So when they win the ball, they look up and both of them can hit a long ball. And that's how they got 2 goals. And sometimes all you need to do is that. I don't think it's going to work. If this was a fully fit and healthy sport, like Sporting Kansas City is out of gas, I don't think it would have worked very well. I don't think this is the recipe for them to reverse that humiliation that they had against LAFC or anything like that. But at least it's respectable. At least it's progress. And for the Quakes fans, I'm sure big exhale these last 3 weeks.
No doubt about it. At Seattle midweek on Wednesday, at Dallas on Saturday. So 2 big tests in the Western Conference. Whole lot of folks holding their breath in Colorado because it is not very good. 2 points from 8 games. They're the last team in Major League Soccer without a win after the 4-1 loss against the Chicago Fire, who Bobby says are doing good soccering. Benny Failhaber and Anthony Hudson came out and basically lambasted the back 6, back 4, whatever you want to call it, the defense in a general sense. 4 goals, 3 goals, 4 goals.
What's coming?
Those are the last 4 games for them. What's coming? What do you think, Bobby? How could I have forgotten? How could that have slipped my mind? There was a half of this table. Mm-hmm. We'll just go ahead and divide it right down the middle. Yep. You know, just Just because we can and should. That said, the Rapids would be in the playoffs. You can't hide.
And
can't
I want to make sure everyone understands fine. The other half of the table laughed at them when
yes,
they said
we did. We absolutely did. So how do you explain this? Benny Failhaber and Anthony Hudson land into the back line. Four goals. All of them, if you go back and watch them, just dreadful, dreadful individual mistakes.
Yeah.
Just diving in, missing the ball, one-on-one with the goalkeeper, not defending a throw-in, ball whipped to the six, open header, a turnover at the top of the
eight.
We got it, Andrew.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Playoff soccer.
No, you're right. We misestimated.
Misunderestimated.
Yep.
You can't, yeah.
You missed. There's some missing going on. What's going on?
I missed on the one part, right? Like, I always talk in the show, you need a center back, right? I talk every single week about the value of a center back. And for some reason, I didn't factor that into the fact that they don't have a center back.
His name is Courtney Ford. We can agree the front six has looked good.
Back in 2 weeks.
The front six has looked okay. The midfield, Kai, the new additions have looked good. And I just forgot about the center back proposition.
So they're trying to figure this
out. Defensive midfield as well.
That too. They're trying to figure this thing out. They say that they are going and looking within the league for some solutions here. Also, Tommy Smith and Danny Wilson perhaps trying to get out from underneath those TAM contracts. I think Anthony Hudson's got to go back to basics a little bit. He can't win when you give up four goals, so priority number one has to be not to give up four goals. I know they want to pass the ball around. There's a lot of big question marks here because the season is slipping away. This was supposed to be a competitive season. I don't think you guys were way outside of your realm.
But let's also
maybe they could make the playoff.
But let's also touch point here that it is Major League Soccer. And you do have to get top seven. And we have seen teams like DC United last year, like Seattle Sounders for the last, like, 17 years.
So you're,
who started
poorly and came back.
I'm not saying that they're going to bring in Wayne Rooney. I'm not saying they have the talent that Seattle's had in those years. But I am saying that if you get on a roll, and let's talk about San Jose, right? If you get teams at the right times. San Jose beat Sporting KC because, as we said, they ran out of gas. Like, they're, if you get teams at the right time in Major League Soccer, you can put together some results. And now, all of a sudden, you've won six straight games.
I'm actually just not here for the Colorado Rapids redemption imaginary story.
When it happens, I'm going to stand on this table. On this show,
we're going to have to really reinforce this table.
The soccer has looked better. The soccer has looked better than the results too. Yeah, the defending's been horrible, but the soccer has been okay at times.
Been entertaining. Going forward, they have some guys who can do some stuff, and that's a lot of fun.
Soccer is about fun.
I enjoy watching it.
Rapids fans don't. They got on us because I said this is the best team in the league to watch because you have no idea what's going to happen. I don't love ugly defensive play, but I do like back and forth games. Let's talk GA Cup just real quick before we get on to expansion and training and solidarity. I think training and solidarity might have to be fleshed out on Thursday when we have a little bit more time. TBD on that one. What stood out from GA Cup, guys? What was the big takeaway?
Everything. There was a lot to take away, but this is the,
not everything. I mean.
Yeah, for sure. This is the most positive I've been about the sport and youth development in this region coming out of a GA Cup. There are, over the last few years, there's been a lot of issues that you've wanted teams in general. So this isn't specific to any MLS club. It's MLS clubs facing off against international opposition. Across the board, they lack intensity in big moments. They struggle with the physicality of international teams, and they struggle with understanding how to win games. It's the same conversation we're talking about in CCL and MLS. So anyone out there who's not watched a lot of it at the youth level, it's in the big moments. We've outplayed this Liga MX youth team, and they hit us on the counter, and they win 1-0, which flips the group on day one, and now we're chasing the rest of the way. It's always been these small moments, and the other big part is just the intensity of the desire to win, the need to win. It hasn't been a technical issue. It's been those things, and this was the first year that I saw a multitude of MLS clubs, because Lucha Gonzalez's FC Dallas team has been able to step up to international opposition in the past, but this year it was the Galaxy, it was the Seattle Sounders who made history, it was Columbus, it was Vancouver, it was Montreal, it was a bulk of teams. Toronto FC
beating that Flamengo team, which is one of the most brutally physical teams I've ever seen at this tournament.
And the Flamengo one was a bit odd because they're coming off the tragedy that happened down there, and there's so much going on around that club. But yes, NYCFC, who have been close the last few years and stuff like that. So that, to me, was a big takeaway.
So it's that's better.
To go off the CCL point, too, we can talk about, and we do talk about the technical and tactical aspects all we want. There is a feeling to when you play a soccer game. There is an emotion to it that you need to experience at a young age. I mean, why do MLS teams not do as well in CCL? Part of it is the money spent on other things, but part of it is you can just see the look on their faces. They are not emotionally prepared. So why put all the money in for 17-year-olds? To get them more games like that. And what David said about the way teams played, it felt like there was a boomerang effect around American-Canadian soccer, that we need our players to be better passers. We need them to be more comfortable on the ball, be able to play out of pressure. So every team did it every single time. And here comes River and Flamengo and Valencia. These teams know how to win, and they would just press and defend properly and win every single time. This is the first year we saw the teams both try and play and capable of playing with also the understanding of how do you actually win a soccer game? And you could see the brains and the emotional intelligence of the MLS teams just be a little higher.
So what is the significance then of the Seattle Sounders U17s winning the Champions Division and knocking off Rivers and West Ham?
Yeah.
And
can I just give the context for the Seattle Sounders group? In 2017, they won the Udon Trophy, which is in the UK. They beat Wolves, FC Basel, and Everton. In 2018, they won the GA Cup Premier Division, which is basically the second division of this tournament. They also won the 2018 USSDA National Championship, and then they won the 2019 GA Cup Champions Division, the first MLS team to win it. Flamengo won last year.
The first MLS team to even make a final.
Yeah. River Plate won three in a row, 15, 16, 17.
So what's it mean?
It means a lot. It means, one, they had the quality out there. It means, from a bigger point of view for Seattle, that they basically restarted their academy. They started a new project under Garth Lagerwey in 2014 and 2015, and this is the beginning of the fruits of that. This isn't a flash in the pan, and this isn't a golden generation. This is restructuring how they do things and the first example of it, and they're going to keep following it up. So for Seattle fans, it's exciting because this is what Garth Lagerwey has been working on. And I laughed to Bobby about it. Like, Garth Lagerwey has said in multiple places, oh, maybe we're not going to spend like we spend. We talked to some of the people in the youth scene, and they said Seattle has given money to the youth structure like no other club has done, and given like an open credit card to just go out and scout the best players around the country. And if the territories are removed, they might be set up as well as anyone to go out and take advantage of being able to pull players from all across the country. On the other side, from what I said, they played against River Plate, and it wasn't beautiful soccer all the time. And it was one of the first moments I've ever seen an MLS team go up against River Plate specifically.
And
with Diego Simeone's son in the lineup and look like they could win every tackle and look more intense. And it was led by Daniel Leyva. And Daniel Leyva is the youngest homegrown signing in Seattle Sounders history. And he was the youngest player on the field for their team. And he wore the captain's armband. And he did every little thing a captain does. He battled in 50-50s to let the rest of the team know we can play with them. He played on the ball and didn't panic in situations to say our technique is good enough in those moments. He even won the title and then was the first player to go over to a Valencia crying kid and pick him up and say it'll be okay and gather him. Daniel Leyva stepped up to every moment he had to in this tournament, and Seattle didn't play their best soccer in three of the four knockout stages, you could say, and they won, which is something MLS teams have never done. And then they blew West Ham out in the semifinal, a team that was bringing in multiple English youth internationals, Slovakian internationals.
I heard they own America.
Yeah, that's what some of the West Ham players are saying. So everything Seattle did was impressive.
Alfonso Ocampo-Chavez, Bobby, give us the quick scouting report because he's the guy we saw scoring all these goals.
Does he have the juice?
A little bit what I said about Danny Huson. So many center strikers now want to come back. They want to play. They basically want to be 10s but start higher. Ocampo Chavez is an old-fashioned center striker. He runs the line. He runs in behind. He works hard pressing. And he's quick enough to do it. Does he have the ability to do it at the first team level? I don't know. I mean, 17-year-olds, we had a great time watching it. They're not men yet. It's really hard to extract what they can do, but he understands the details of playing number 9, and he certainly has the skill set to at least do it at a very high level at this age group.
Should the Sounders sign him to a first-team contract this week?
Might they have to?
No, I mean,
they might have
coming off a performance like this, it signals something to these kids, and it signals something to the fan base. This is the project that we've been working on for 4 years.
Now, I think that signal's been sent by playing them in USL at the ages they're playing them at.
That's
the
fair.
Signal is
USL and MLS.
Agreed, but he's not ready to
control on the contract.
But he's not ready to play in MLS whether they sign him today to a homegrown deal or not.
I know,
Leyva's not going
to
get. But
symbols are powerful things.
For sure.
And after being the first MLS team to win this tournament, with Ocampo Chavez having 6 goals,
yep.
To me, it's a no-brainer.
The only thing I would point out is they don't have a ton of roster spots. So if they are going to bring in that DP,
they have a lot of roster
spots. There's some questions. I got to cut this short. This is we got to get to the 30 teams. MLS Board of Governors meeting in LA. Big news, as I said, we're going to have to push because we got to give it the right amount of time to Thursday, and we have a guest perhaps coming that will really shed some light, the training compensation and solidarity payments. They are a big deal. Go to MLSsoccer.com, read all about it. It's the first time since 1996 ever, aka, that MLS is going to participate in this. But Board of Governors, expansion, we already knew 25, 26, and 27. Miami, Nashville, and Austin, 2020 and 2021 is when they come in. They're going to 30, folks. Should not be surprised about that. Expansion has been at a breakneck speed for the past decade and more. There were 10 teams in 2004. 10 teams. 10. 10. There are 24 right now, and they're going to be 27, and they're going to be 30 as well. And it looks like 20 and 29 will be Sacramento and St. Louis.
Probably in that order.
Commissioner Don Garber said that they hope to have this announced by the 2019 All-Star Game. Well, that's very quickly. What do we make of this news, guys?
I'll say about that little piece of it, both of the teams that we're talking about, the cities we're talking about, the structures, are prepared. So it isn't like, oh, we're going to announce by 2019 and these teams are going to have to get it going quickly. Sacramento Republic are ready to go from a club structure point of view.
And also from the approvals that they need for the stadiums and everything. That's really the
plug
key.
Plug and play.
You don't make this announcement if you don't have faith in Sacramento and St. Louis as markets to get all the bona fides in order. You don't do it.
No.
It's a vote of confidence, basically, from the Board of Governors to say, you guys are ready. And now they are definitely not saying that the board has not selected any particular markets yet, but, quote, they did authorize our office to exclusively advance our discussions with potential ownership groups in St. Louis and Sacramento. So you can, in many ways, obviously read between the lines.
I'm just so happy for it's not done yet, but I'm happy for the fans of Sacramento because they've been turning out at the USL level for half a decade now. That team seems to be doing everything right. In terms of getting the ownership group together, they have the stadium plan and it's ready to go. They have an academy that they're starting to invest significantly in. I think it'll be not only great for them, I think it'll be great for the Quakes.
Yeah.
Because that'll create an instant drivable rivalry. And I know
it just brings soccer into conversation more in the area.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be talking about soccer. It's on more airwaves. It's something that is around people more often, and we've seen it work for LA Galaxy and LAFC, even though the Galaxy were a star. It just brings more of the sport and this league into that area.
Sacramento wants to be big league, and I know that's like kind of a lame cliche, but
it's booming.
It is, but they want more indications outwardly so that they have that status.
It's just in terms of primary statistical area, it's a top 25 market. It's about 2.6, 2.7 million, and it's growing at like an 8% rate over the course of the decade.
Can I give fans a Doyle fun fact?
Sure.
One thing Doyle loves to do is look at Google Maps and look at potential stadium sites. It's fair.
I don't think anybody should be surprised by that.
Yeah, rail yards seem to be where Sacramento are headed.
I know every nook and cranny of Chicago.
Wow. St. Louis as well. They immediately put out a stadium rendering, which looked pretty cool. It was like a box shape with two big roofs. They're saying it'd be 22,000 to 25,000 capacity there.
Downtown, where the other sports
You heard Taylor Twellman go on about this. You can go check his Twitter feed. He's all over this stuff. At Taylor Twellman. The other news coming out of this, Don Garber said Las Vegas, Charlotte, Phoenix, and Detroit. Those are places where there have either been very positive discussions, quote, or that they believe there is potential and that they are talking to folks. So those are the four, as you look at 30, that appear to be kind of setting up for that next process.
I don't know what Bobby's talking about. One of the things I was going to say was this also helps USL because it helps those franchises create excitement around them and keep people interested with the idea of MLS coming, which isn't the only reason you go to a soccer game. It's not the only reason the clubs like Phoenix Rising exist and Las Vegas Lights, but it helps those markets, I think. And if they can continue to bring in fans for a sustained time, even if they don't get into MLS, it might be a positive feedback for the club to have people interested and involved in the conversation around those clubs, which helps just build the soccer structure in the country.
Bobby, what'd you have here? You had a peculiar grin on your face, I think.
Bobby literally wrote in gigantic letters on his laptop.
What about Mechanicsburg, though?
I like that the G goes on the second line. It's classic.
You got to work on your kerning there. You got to get your kerning right on that one. The other thing that Commissioner Don Garber said here that is of interest and of note, and we will take any and all of your mail. We're going to do a mega mailbag, I think, on Thursday because it just doesn't sound like we're going to get to this stuff. He's saying that there could be a new look, potentially could be a new look for the league's future format and competitive structure, maybe regionalized competition. So you're thinking 30 teams. Maybe you're saying that you go to 3-team conferences. I don't know. People love to email us with that stuff. So dream big, I guess. But for now, MLS is growing. No doubt about it. $200 million is the expansion fee. That's some serious money. All right. Big thanks to John Molinaro. Big thanks to you guys. Matt Doyle, Bobby Warshaw, David Goss, bringing it back to what I kind of feel like an old days pod. A 2018 pod.
And I'm just sitting here trying to spend 40 minutes talking about things Weeby doesn't care about. ETR 101.
Hey, we're getting out of here, okay? We'll see you on Thursday, everybody, with more on training compensation and solidarity payments, reviews from Wednesday, and a mega mailbag. We'll see you then.